Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. During each episode, we're diving headfirst into conversations with some of the most incredible RevOps leaders out there. Not CEOs, not big flashy executives, not vendors. We're talking to the people who are actually doing the work, the ones leading teams, the ones in the trenches, grinding it out every single day. We're taking things up a notch, getting deeper, having more fun, and as always, keeping it real. Remember our theme, RevOps Unboxed, and today we're unboxing it all. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I'm Sandy Robinson, your host of RevOps Unboxed. Today I'm here with Ali Spinelli. She is the VP of RevOps at PandaDoc. Ali and I are friends. I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so, so much for joining me on the podcast.
Hi, thank you. It's great to be here, Sandy.
Very cool. So, you know, I know a little bit about your background, but if you could do me a favor and just tell the listeners a little bit about, you know, what you do at Panda, maybe kind of how you got there, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I joined PandaDoc in December of 2024, and I had the opportunity to join a pretty fantastic team on the revenue operations and revenue enablement side of the house. And since I've joined, it's really been a process of learning, you know, learning more about the market, learning more about our product, and having the opportunity to work with the team to help take revenue operations to the next level.
Very cool. So how did you get into revenue operations? I'm always fascinated. I talk to so many people and like literally not one person gets to revenue operations in the same way. So tell me a little bit about your journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So I get this question often, and I always give the honest answer of it was completely by accident. When I started out in my career, I don't even know if revenue operations existed at the time. And just through navigating what I would say at the time was called business and legal affairs, you know, at different organizations, and then contract management, kind of like a deal desk type function. And then just from there, it progressed. And you know, getting closer to the operational side of the house while staying close to go to market. And I just started to see these opportunities come up, right? In terms of getting the phone calls, we're looking for somebody who is an operator to help us really scale out the revenue organization. And it just organically happened from there. But I started really in contract management is probably what I would say.
Wow. That's great. I don't think I've heard that one yet. So that's really interesting because you get a lot of people, you know, from the sales side or from, you know, the finance side or analyst or admin. I think that's really interesting, just that foundational understanding of, you know, contractual elements, the legal side of things. And how has that helped you with, you know, where you are today?
Well, I would say the most impactful experience I have was at a company called FXall, which is a foreign currency trading platform that was acquired by Thomson Reuters. And in my time there, I started getting involved in negotiation of contracts with customers. And I found myself speaking with 6-7 attorneys from Apple, right? Or from these multinational banks. And having to hold my own, right? So negotiating business terms, negotiating legal terms, while I'm not an attorney, just, you know, having the experience of several years after school of, you know, learning basically contract law. So it was a great experience that I'll never forget. There were many times where I had imposter syndrome and I'm on the phone, you know, and I'm chatting with these lawyers and I'm like, what am I doing? But I was able to successfully navigate through these conversations, and I learned the art of persuasion through that experience, and also how to influence. And really, I think the most important lesson I had was around active listening. And sometimes it's what you don't hear that allows you to figure out how do we get to the root cause? How do we solve this problem? How do I put together pieces of a puzzle to figure out how to solve, you know, get a contract signed, get a deal over the finish line, but then also as it relates to revenue operations, put the pieces together of the puzzle to come up with the best business solution.
That's great because I mean, especially when you're talking about enterprise sales, contracts can be so complex and salespeople struggle, I think. And so I can see such an immense value in having somebody on your team that can truly understand the mechanics and then having the people side, the negotiation side, and it all kind of fitting together. So do you have like a deal desk person, you know, at Panda? Obviously Panda solves some of those problems, the product itself, but just in terms of the way you're applying that and the way you run your team, how does that work in your RevOps org?
So it's something we're still navigating through in terms of the needs of the organization, as I've joined about 3 months ago.
I guess that is 3 months. Yeah, you're like December 2024. I'm like, wait.
4 months.
That's not that long ago. Or 4 months. Yeah, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, but it's been a great journey. And the good news is I was very familiar with PandaDoc prior to joining the organization as a customer. So I was aware of the value that it brings and obviously very excited to utilize it internally as well. And you did mention we do provide automation, which helps to solve for some of those deal desk type activities or needs that you have. However, we do, I would say, you know, in terms of having a complementary resource or folks that help, you know, make sure that those types of activities are happening, we do have some folks that are informally in that type of role that will be visiting, you know, as we continue to grow and scale out the organization.
So in your organization, when we think about revenue operations, so you have obviously the contracts function. Do you have commissions? I think you have marketing ops, sales ops. Is it a true RevOps organization? Can you maybe tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I first joined, one of the things that I always like to do when I join an organization is learn, of course, the inner workings of the organization, right? So I get a sense of what does our data look like? What does the reporting and analytics look like? What do our systems look like? And then have conversations internally. In terms of how we were structured when I joined, we had a marketing operations function, a sales ops function where we just recently hired a fantastic director of sales ops. We had a CX ops director as well, and a rev tech team along with a go-to-market enablement function. And one of the things that I like to take a look at is as we think of what revenue operations means, especially as a company matures and grows, how does that continue to evolve? So meaning what RevOps looks like at a $1 to $10 million company will very much will look very different, right? As you get to 100 million plus and even beyond. I like to look at the best practices, the experiences I've had in terms of what structure looks like and what works the best. And one of the things that we're starting to do is really embrace more of that, what I consider to be a true RevOps structure, which is we've consolidated marketing operations, most of marketing operations and new business sales ops under one leader. So her name's Monique. She's also fantastic. And she is now overseeing what I like to look at as customer acquisition holistically. And the reason for that is, in my experience throughout the years, you have sales ops, you have marketing ops. It works well under one umbrella. But even under that structure, sometimes you can get the silos within the sale, the operations team, where we're not looking at customer acquisition as a whole. So this allows us, under a senior leader, to have the full customer acquisition aligning to the customer journey, right? That phase of the customer journey. And looking at things more holistically. We kept the post-sale structure as is with our director, Greta. And we are starting to really up-level the rev tech team. So we have a group of great Salesforce administrators who are now going to be stepping into rev tech manager roles, where they're looking at our systems and our processes more holistically and more aligned again with the customer journey. So we're thinking through integrations, how data is flowing through the systems. And we've also created a team that I'm calling the Revenue Insights and Strategy team. And that team is where we're going to centralize forecasting, centralize comp modeling and strategy, centralize analytics across the go-to-market in partnership with our data team. So it's creating a bit more of alignment to the customer journey and the way that we actually operate as a function and as an organization. But then also it's creating centers of excellence or shared services within the organization. So we can go a little bit deeper and more expertise in some of the areas where it's really required for a company of our size.
No, you mentioned RevTech, and I like, I've always looked at that role instead of just, not just, but the Salesforce admin, that you're in charge of the revenue technology and the architecture, how those integrations work together. And I think thinking of it in those terms is really critical. And I know some companies it's hard because there's that friction between IT, if IT owns the administration versus your team. Obviously there's always a partnership, but I like that you mentioned RevTech, and maybe can you expand a little bit on what that team does? Obviously they're managing Salesforce, the integrations, how are they operating, on a regular basis?
Yeah. So we are going through what I would call an evolution. So we're going from, having a bunch of really great folks on the team that are a bit more in a help desk type function, whereas ticketing, unable to get to the more proactive state because of that sort of volume in the way that we're currently positioned, to more proactive, to being able to actively, to be strategic business partners in the organization and proactively identify opportunity where we could create more efficiency, which is a huge thing for us as an organization, let alone as a team. But also, where can we be more efficient? Where can we become a force multiplier and use, I always emphasize process optimization and technology, because often I feel like folks start with the technology and view it as a silver bullet, when it's just, in my years of doing this, it's not. You need to think through what's the problem you're trying to solve, and then how do you solve it using process, using technology, using data.
Words to live by, like, what problem are we trying to solve? That's always my favorite thing. Somebody puts a ticket in or like, oh, we need to add this field, we need to do this. That's great that you think that's the solution, but what is the problem that you're trying to solve? And let's work together to see if this is, what the actual solution is, right? Just like sales, you don't lead with solutions anymore. You understand what the problems are, what are the pains, and what are you trying to solve? So I always try to think of it that way. But I think it's just really important, like, that you, by saying that, I mean, treating everything that comes into your org, and that helps you, I think, shift into that more proactive mode.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, so that's the journey that we're on right now.
That's great. And I like how you're probably one of the first people that I've had on the show that's truly had like a CX operations. And I love that, that idea, because it does RevOps teams, I guess depending on the stage of the company, you do get hyper-focused on, the getting the inbound set up, and we've got to generate leads and marketing ops, sales ops. So maybe can you dive in a little bit on what your vision of CX ops is? And, I know you're building out the org, or maybe how you've seen it before in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the case of Panadoc, I was fortunate where the executive leadership already bought into, right, this, having a CX ops function. But what I would say is, historically, and I think back to the days of Yodel, right, which, you and I have chatted about before, where we have, I remember joining the organization and I was told there's a leaky bucket, right? Lots of business coming in. Unfortunately, more business than they were comfortable with coming out, right, at the bottom of the bucket. So in part of my discovery, I would chat with the head of CX at the time, and I asked what our engagement model looks like. So how do we segment our customers, and then how do we interact with them? How do we engage with them? And I was told that every customer would get 5 hours or so per month in support. And so that sparked for me, and this was several years ago, but it sparked for me, you know, the sort of, well, that means we treat every customer the same. I'm a strong believer in treating every customer right, but like you have to, and you want to do that. But to be honest, right, if you're running a business, are you going to treat a customer who's bringing you $1 million a year in, you know, annual revenue versus a customer who's bringing you $5,000 a year exactly the same? So right. I think it's just paying more attention to, we think about customer acquisition. Folks tend historically, and I think this is shifting, which is fantastic, but historically, I would find that folks would think of customer acquisition first and would not pay attention to post-sale until there was a problem. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the value of CX operations is you have, you know, again, that connective tissue. You have operational resources that are focusing strategically and tactically across the customer journey. And right. proactively being able to get ahead of those issues that might cause that contraction, that might cause that churn, and allows you to think right. about retention. But how do we increase loyalty? How do we increase stickiness? How do we build, and in turn, building loyalty brings you more customers, right? Because you have people that are happy and they're sharing the, spreading the word about the value that you bring to them, to their peers and their friends, right? So I just think that I've seen a real shift in the tide over the last few years as it comes to CX ops. I think it's often overlooked. And I would argue it is just as significant of a priority for an organization, even if not more than customer acquisition, right? Because you can't keep, some companies have a smaller customer base, right? Very specific.
Right.
You know, verticals that they're selling into, and there's only so many customers you have in that space. And I've worked at organizations right. like that as well. So in terms of the significance of it, and there's just a wealth of knowledge that you have from your customer base that, that you can bring with you throughout the organization to your product, to marketing, to sales.
Right.
And having an operational resources focused on that, I think is just critical.
I mean, you're definitely preaching to the choir here. I think where companies struggle is as you grow, obviously you're working for, you know, in a much larger organization. But you know, when you're thinking startup, scale up, you have to think forward, you know, forward thinking and setting it up to where I may not have a body right now, but how am I thinking with that full customer journey in mind? Because to your point, if you only have 50 enterprise clients, you know, you don't want to mess any of them up, right? So you want to make sure that you're maximizing that and giving the team the data they need. And you mentioned support too. I think sometimes that also gets lost in the sauce because support teams typically aren't rolling up to the customer success teams, right, in organizations. So, you know, they're in their own, their kind of own silo, our favorite word, in the organization. So, but branching that in to the process and how does a support model impact and, you know, those other various teams that may not report up to the customer success manager, right? How do you approach that?
So, and I think this takes me back to when I think about earlier in our conversation, when I was in the role and I learned, you know, of negotiating contracts and learning how to influence, right? That things you can't directly control. And I believe that there are ways to prove the value of providing that support, whether it's a dedicated resource, right? Or it's through shared resources or other methods and ways of being able to do that. I've worked at organizations where support has rolled into the CX leader or CS. And I've worked at organizations where it hasn't. And I would say that it's very clear when you could see the difference between the two when you have that resource focused on that and you don't. But again, I think it's the emphasis on the significance of knowing your customers, looking at the value of the insights that are provided from your customers, the experience you provide them. Again, often, you know, I'll join previous other organizations where I'll hear like Yodel, we have an issue with churn, right? Or we don't have an issue with churn, so we don't have to focus on it. And my response is always, you don't want to wait until you do, right? Put the right framework in place, whether that's dedicated resource or just having, you know, the right systems in place to monitor and to drive success. But when you are experiencing that issue, once you start to diagnose and dig in, you often find there were so many red flags, there was so much data that was available through support, through success, through if account management is a function at your organization, that had never made it right to the right places to drive change. And I always just think that that is all the times that I've gone through this process of diagnosis at many organizations throughout the years, it's always led to the same spot, which is we haven't tapped into the customer base. We haven't asked the right questions. And in terms of the experience, we haven't spent enough. We haven't invested enough on the experience outside of the product.
Time to shine a spotlight on today's sponsor, PandaDoc. If non-compliant quotes are causing escalations and clogging up your deal cycle, well, then it's time you met PandaDoc. PandaDoc is an all-in-one document management solution that simplifies the entire configure price quote process. No matter how complex your catalog is, PandaDoc makes it actually easy for reps to import accurate pricing, product, and service data based on rules you set in advance. This includes discounts, recurring charges, and other deal specifics. Because both you and sales reps have eyes on the same live document, approvals are a snap, enabling reps to push deals to close one ASAP. Make 2025 the year your revenue team gets on the same page and stays there. Visit pandadoc.com/ROA to learn more.
And that kind of goes back to what you said about RevOps in general, right? So you're connecting that entire customer journey, and as a RevOps leader, trying to figure out where things are disconnected, and you know, if the support team is in a different world, and this is what I've run into, because I'm about 5 months into my role, I started in November in my role, and they're all using different systems, you know, not recording calls and things like that. So they're very simple things to kind of get people connected, even if they're not on the same teams, because it's not that people are intentionally making their own silos. A lot of times the silo happens because, especially in a startup, it's like, I can go buy my own shiny tool, so we're just going to do it this way. And then, you know, someone over here who's also smart and knows how to admin tools, and because they're all developers and smart people, they can figure it out. And so then they set up a different tool. And pretty soon, even small companies have these data silos. And I think it's RevOps is, I firmly, you know, believe it's the revenue, it's the engine, right? That's going to really ultimately help to drive revenue, which ultimately means the client is happy, customers engaged with the company. But it just kind of goes back to, like you said, the process, the technology, you know, bringing those people together. But how do you approach that internally? Because you mentioned a number of times your negotiation skills, your, you know, the communication, what problem are you trying to solve? You're working with a lot of different people in different silos. What kind of tips or suggestions can you give to people listening that, you know, maybe they're not VPs too, right? They could, you know, could be an analyst or somebody on the sales ops team. You know, how can they work between these silos and work within their company?
Absolutely. I think you bring up a really good point, which is you don't have to have a senior title to influence and to drive change and to be able to be impactful. And I believe that from my experience, I've been able to help break down those silos, drive the change, drive more collaboration through relationship building. Just bringing your genuine self to the table and trying to connect with the folks that are part of, you know, this equation, and showing the value, right? Building healthy working relationships, and being able to become, I always look at revenue operations as the connective tissue, right? Across the revenue organization or go-to-market organization. And with that, I think just being able to serve that purpose. So with that experience I had at FXall, one of the things I learned was to be adaptable. And when I say that, meaning you're at any given day in an operations role, you could be talking to people globally from different backgrounds, right? Different, they have different roles, maybe someone from engineering, then you're talking to someone from the data team, then you're talking to somebody from sales. So it's being able to really embrace the psychology, I guess you could say, the human side of business, and being able to build to some degree those healthy connections with people, which to me builds trust faster, right? Which you bring your genuine self to the table, you allow yourself to build that bridge a little bit. It makes it a lot easier to have those conversations, to the tough conversations, right? About driving change. And to your point, which is, I think, a really good one, it's not like anyone chooses to operate in silo generally, right? It's just, that's what happens sometimes organically. And even though folks may be open to the change, it's still a change. So that gets, you know, more into, again, you know, and I'd love to know your thoughts on this, but like, and how you've done this, but like breaking down, so I can learn as well. But like breaking down, like, how do you actually connect, form that connection enough, right? That's genuine, and you're able to have those tougher conversations and feel comfortable to build that trust a little bit faster than it might take purely based on building trust off of results.
Yeah. Results are key, right? Like low hanging fruit is always good. You know, if there's a problem, like you said, what are the problems? If there's a problem to solve, I do my best to apply what I teach in like sales training to that is like, when I meet new people or work with people in the organization, like, you know, what are your pains? What are your problems? What are your challenges working with the sales team? What's your challenges working with the implementations team? You know, what keeps you up at night? How many meetings are you getting sucked into for deals? Like, you know, and think of, you know, that, and ultimately how does that cause friction with our clients, right? Or our prospects? Because, you know, nobody likes to be in meetings all day. And so I just find it's, you know, understanding their world and asking questions that, you know, get them, you know, get an understanding of where they're coming from. So you can truly understand what the problems are, because, you know, if you're talking to, like for us, we have, you know, a head of our product engineering, like the smartest people that know the products. And we're pulling them into the sales conversations a lot because, you know, we just don't have enough people. We're building up the solutions consultants team, but these guys are like, you know, they're great at it, but that's not like their day job, right? Like they need to be building the products, not talking about it on, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours of sales calls a week. So just understanding, like understand that problem. Well, how can we knowledge transfer or build something or work together to, you know, help each other, to help you free yourself up so you can build cooler products and get our team up to speed to where maybe we just need to chat you. We don't need you on the actual call, or we're building a bot that answers you, that follows you and gets the answers from you, you know? So I like to approach it that way, but it's tough because like you said, like changes, nobody perceives change as good. And the other thing I find is when it comes to tech, like people like the tech they use, and, you know, it's like, ooh, nope, it's mine. It's my budget, you know? And it's like, that's great, but you know, let's talk about it. Why do you like that tool? What, you know, if you had a different tool, would you care as long as it solved the same problem, you know? So I don't know. I just like asking open-ended questions.
That's great. I think it's something that I'll definitely take with me as well, you know, because it's no matter how long you've been doing something, right? There's always new challenges and new opportunities that come up. And it's interesting you bring up tech. That's been something that's top of mind for me as well. And, you know, at PandaDocus, we're navigating through the landscape, right? And I know with AI and the impact it can have, you know, across the go-to-market organization. And it's something that you bring up the shiny object, right, sort of syndrome. And I think that's something that's existed for as long as I can remember, right? And I'm sure the intensity is only growing with AI and all the buzz that's happening around it. But I think I'm curious to know your thoughts also, like in terms of how you navigate through that and what truly is worth the investment, you know, again, taking it back to what's the problem we're trying to solve. And I think, you know, a lot of folks are coming at it through the angle of we need AI versus what's the problem we're trying to solve. And then what are the right solutions for us to put in place to get there? So I'm curious how you've been, I know you're new in role too, like how do you navigate through that? And, you know, I can share a bit in that as well, if you don't mind, but.
Yeah, I'd love to hear, like, I mean, I look at it as whack-a-mole, right? It's like a game of whack-a-mole, you know, like this has popped up here, this has popped up here. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. You've got lots of cool, you know, shiny objects out there and it's easy to go chase those flares and turn on the bot and turn on AI and then pretty soon there's, you know, 6-7 different Gen AI bots asking the same questions, getting, you know, 6-7 different answers for clients. You know, that's a problem. That becomes a problem quickly, you know. You know, I've got a brand new tech stack. We moved to Salesforce. We just pressed the button on Monday. So everybody's moved over from our prior, we were in Zoho. Zoho is a great tool, but we outgrew it. So, you know, we decided to go with Salesforce. So yeah, just trying to make those strategic decisions, but it's like, okay, there's Einstein AI, we got an enablement tool, that's an AI, you know, they're kind of looking at the same places. We have a call recording that has an AI and so does Einstein, you know, so there's coordinating that. And it's a problem that gets out of control fast. Like I only have like 4 tools right now, you know, and it's already a problem to solve. And then you start adding, you know, multiple functions and different people and then homegrown things being built. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answers other than like getting alignment right on RevOps. Who's not just making the decision, but at least who's involved. Right. So it needs to be considered company wide. It goes back to what you said in the beginning. Like what is RevOps? Like if your company's not bought in on RevOps and that all of these tools impact the customer journey, that rev tech, then it's hard, right? It's really hard. So I don't know. That's kind of how I'm approaching it. I'm trying to be lean and mean right now with our tools and make those decisions and not go for the shiny objects. But how are you dealing with everything?
Yeah, I would say I've been in situations where similarly, like very small tech stack. And I do find that there are advantages to that, right? Pros and cons, meaning you don't have like a nest of, you know, sort of things that you need to navigate through and try to undo and figure out. And then I've been on the opposite side of it where there have been many tools we're trying to navigate and trying to figure out, you know, with often a high spend associated with it and trying to figure out what can we consolidate or remove or
right. And you're going, you get it. And you're going, why? Yes. That was my prior org. It's like, why? It's like, oh, well, that person was here. They bought this tool. Then they left. And then the new person bought another tool. And then that other thing's still there. And it's like, oh my gosh. And you're just going, oh.
Exactly. You know, and then you're there to kind of undo it all, right? Or make sense of it. Right. And I actually think because of this and because of the way that technology is becoming such a force multiplier for organizations, what I call the rev tech function, it could be called other things at other organizations, right? But essentially, I see the next few years that function becoming even more critical and strategic within the organization. And, you know, we talked about what does RevOps mean and how it can mean different things at different organizations. often I find that the RevTech team was viewed as Salesforce administration.
Right.
And that is true, right? But that is just, to me, a small piece of a really big, puzzle in terms of what it could become, right? And I think if I was to make a prediction, I would say over the next few years, I see that role becoming even more strategic and a strategic driver within these organizations. And it's going to change the landscape of revenue operations means within an organization.
100%. And I would say, yeah, companies should definitely double down on that, because even with AI and, Salesforce is building stuff to help admins even, right? Like build workflows and things like that. But even with all of this, it's even more important to have that strategic approach because it's how you're fostering growth. It's how you're setting up the revenue engine. And, it's not as simple as, IT can manage it, right? It's thinking in terms of our customers and what are the impacts to the customers.
Absolutely. And I think of the new roles that I see out there, like go-to-market architect, which, to be honest, I'm not still quite sure what that means yet, but I could do my diligence.
It sounds cool.
It sounds cool. Yeah. But I think that's kind of like the market, the industry kind of organically coming up with this type of concept around what this looks like and the significance of process mm-hmm. and systems. But yeah, I think it's going to be a really interesting ride over the next, 5 to 10 years to see how things continue to evolve in this mm-hmm. space. But I also think that, with that, there comes the question of where people fit in, right? So meaning, I think there's a sphere with AI, with technology, that we're going to be replacing people. I don't think that's true. I think that we're just going to change the role that people play, potentially. Mm-hmm. So for example, at a couple of organizations, we've successfully automated inbound, right, to some degree, and sometimes right. fully. And I think there's a lot of, the use of Clay, the use of other technology to be able to automate outbound. And what does that look like? Mm-hmm. What is the role of a rep, or, specifically when it comes to sales on the post-sale side of the house, when you have support, right? You have these different tools that are available. We talked about PandaDoc and the value we're bringing in terms of the deal desk type function, right? And mm-hmm. cash and those types of things. So I think it's just, it's forcing the conversation of how are things going to evolve, and I believe a very positive way, and the role that mm-hmm. play, and more
yep.
adding, focusing more on value add activities versus a lot of the things that technology today is helping to automate, which allows folks to focus on those value add activities. Like sellers can spend more time selling, right? Versus
right.
updating their CRM or
right.
spending hours. I remember the days where, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I remember the days where, reps would spend hours putting together a proposal or a contract or
right.
prospecting. You had to go to like all these different resources to figure out to do your research. And now you could do it in like
scanning in business cards. Like I did that.
It's true. And now this is all yeah. evolved and like,
right.
It's an exciting space. I think it's a saturated space when it comes to a lot of mm-hmm. things, but it'll be interesting to see yep. what survives and what thrives over the next few years.
Yeah. I mean, it's evolution. It doesn't mean the roles are going away. They're just changing. They're different and they're turning into different things and different needs. And, anybody in this type of role, RevOps, GTM, anything that's involving the customer and technology, you have to be ready to change. I was in a HubSpot org for the last about 2 years before I jumped back into Salesforce here at Quavo. And in 2 years, literally everything has changed in Salesforce.
Wow.
AI has come out, it's been around forever, AI, but Gen AI in particular, and the way it's being utilized and setting up and, all that stuff is completely different. So you have to learn, you have to educate yourself, you have to be agile, it's it's going to change. It's going to change tomorrow. When we listen to this podcast a year from now, we're going to be like, what were you talking about? That's ridiculous. You know, I mean, I just think that's the biggest thing is, and we have to have a responsibility to, you know, you don't just do the things you've always done at this point, you know, and I've tried really hard because I've been doing it a long time. Right. So it's easy to just go to your go-tos. Right. But there's new stuff out there, you know, enablement is a big one. It doesn't have to be a heavy lift anymore. There's so many options out there. And so you have to, I think, just be agile, get those great architects, those folks, those rev tech people who know that stuff, they live and breathe it, and they can see it all like the Matrix, right? And, you know, to kind of jump in there and figure it out, because it's all new. You got to have people who can figure that stuff out. Yeah. It's because it changes. Like I was, I'm going to give Panda a plug here because, you know, when I was over at Patra, we had HubSpot, we had Panda, we were using Panda. And that's one of the tools that I found worked really well with HubSpot, because there aren't a lot out there. It had a really great app in I think it was, it's like a playbook the way it displays in HubSpot. And, you know, we didn't even realize it, but the rep was like, hey, you know, we have CPQ, we can just like add that. I'm like, what? You guys are doing what? And like, so you have to just have a responsibility to even understand the capabilities of the tools that you have. And, you know, how do they work? How does it work with your instance? Is it going to be something that's going to be easy? And those kind of things. But if you have a good rev tech person, or you're thinking in that way, then you're kind of like really digging all of that out. And how can we really make this impactful and save people the time and, you know, all that other stuff.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of the tech companies know that, right? So to your point, Even PandaDoc, like we've now rolled out CPQ for Salesforce, right? So just, I think a lot of these companies, and Salesforce is another really good example, Gong, you know, where you could see that, a lot of organizations know the value in being offering more, trying to become more of that one-stop type of solution. And I know what's top of mind for me and always has been is consolidation, right? Mm-hmm. So especially, I know, Sandy, you've worked at public companies, right? But if you're working at a pre-IPO company who has their eyes set on becoming a public company, which most do, as far as I'm aware, there's always that in the back of your mind as an operator, how do we ensure that we build a system that we're preparing for that as well? That, you know, so balancing sort of the excitement of what's available out there with how do we ensure that we're also building to scale or building in a way that provides the compliance and other things that we need to keep in mind as we navigate through.
100%. I mean, and you can really impact that valuation.
Yeah.
I mean, this role, if done well with the right tools in place that, you know, makes it desirable, that's not something they have to fix, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times it's, you know, companies get acquired or they IPO or whatever the case may be. And in the new world, they've got to bring in RevOps and fix it, right? So they're doing it despite the situation, right? And I've gone into two companies for that reason, to go kind of you know, post acquisition or something. And so what you're saying makes a lot of sense, is you're being strategic. It's a strategic function, starting with, you know, the tech being the data, really being the foundation, but the tech leading to how does that, you know, how are you supporting the customer journey? But I mean, we could probably go on for days here. I know we do anyway, but can you, you've dropped a lot of really great nuggets and things in our discussion here, but can you maybe leave people with, think, you know, just your like go-tos, like what is, if you're in RevOps, like, you got to do this, or you got to look at it this way, or
absolutely.
You know, I don't know if you have any words of wisdom.
Ooh, I will. So let's see. Here are the things that immediately come to mind in conversations I've had. And I actually am going to start even before you join an organization. I'll often get folks who have worked with or who reach out who are looking to either move into RevOps, right, or they're earlier in their career. And one thing that I do like to say is back to what does revenue operations mean at the organization? If you're interviewing, ask the question, right? What does it mean at this organization? And make sure it aligns with your vision and your expectation of how you want to operate. I would also say that once you're in the role and you're navigating through it, the word that always resonates with me, my theme is adaptability. And like you had mentioned, you have to be open to new things and change. And revenue operations is consistent change more often than not. So having that appetite for that. And also try to have fun. It can be very stressful. You can work at organizations where sometimes, you know, they do recognize the value that revenue ops brings, and that's the best case scenario. And you can work at organizations where sometimes you're the unsung hero. And I think it's being able to find those wins and being able to enjoy the ride and that journey, because it's an exciting one. And it's one that I'm very glad that I accidentally discovered. So
I love it. Enjoy the ride. Well, thank you so much, Allie. I really appreciate you coming today and chatting with me. Hope you have an amazing day. And we will talk to you soon.
You as well. Thank you, Sandy. Take care.
This has been another episode of RevOps Unboxed in partnership with the Revenue Operations Alliance. Until next time, keep unboxing.